Okay, we're beginning the book of Shmuel, and I think it's always good that when you start a book to fly through it and then start it in depth. So we'll do a quick overview of the book of Shmuel, and then Mezachim will begin. The overview will take us half the class, and then we'll begin the book in depth. The book of Shmuel really is one book. It's the Christians that divided it to Shmuel A and Shmuel B. Just like the book of Ezra is one book, and the Christians divided it to Ezra and Nehemiah. In Jewish tradition, there's one book, Ezra. It's one long book. If you read in the Talmud and the Rishonim, they always talk about Ezra. The Christians divided it to Ezra and Nehemiah. So the same thing, Shmuel. There's one Shmuel. The fact that we say Samuel A and Samuel B, Kings A, Kings B, it's just a Christian thing. It's a little bit weird how it got accepted that we use their chapters and we speak about it as though it's given. It's not really given, and it's not really anything. It's not our tradition. It's a Christian monk that did this.
But Rabbi, why don't they change it like back to the Roman way? I mean, even today, the Stone edition has Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel.
Right. Everyone uses it. It's a good question. Why? It's a good question. I don't have a good answer. I have the same question. Yes, you'll notice the Chafetz Chaim doesn't. The Chafetz Chaim, whenever he quotes a pasuk, he says it's in Rishon of this parsha, Sheni of the parsha. He doesn't use the chapters. Yes.
Why did the Christians?
I don't know. It's a Christian monk. I don't know. Okay. So the book of Shmuel begins with the story of Elkanah and his two wives. One couldn't have children. Finally, she was blessed. We'll learn the details later today. She had a child. She named him Shmuel. And she designated him to be in the service of God and brought him up to the temple. Shmuel learned under the Kohen Gadol Eli. And then God appears to him. Initially, he doesn't realize it's God. After two or three times that God calls his name, we'll learn the story. He figures out it's God, and God tells him that there'll be a great war and terrible things are going to happen, and at that war God will pay back Eli, because Eli is behaving improperly and doing what? And not rebuking his children. Eli's children are behaving improperly. Pinchas and Chofni, very good. And Eli is not rebuking them enough, and at that war really what happens is the Jews bring along the Aron, the holy ark, to the war. And the ark is taken by the Philistines. And at that war, Eli's two children, Hophni and Pinchas, die. And when Eli hears word of the Aron's being taken, Eli falls off the chair, breaks his neck, and dies as well on that same day. So on the same day, we lose our Aron into Philistine territory. We lose the war. And the Kohanim, the Kohanic dynasty of Eli and his two children, die. Then we have the story of the Aron in Philistine territory. And in Philistine territory, God punishes them, and they suffer, and they can't go to the bathroom. They have all kinds of diseases. And they try sending the Aron from one territory to another territory until finally the Philistines say, "Well, you're trying to kill me." Each territory doesn't want to take the Aron. They ask the elders, "What should we do?" The elders say, "If you want to make sure it's not a coincidence, take mother cows, attach them to a wagon, put the Aron on the wagon, and put their babies behind and tie them up and see if the Aron... if the mothers go, when they put the mother cows and they put the Aron on the wagon and they tie the babies behind and the babies are calling the mothers start singing and humming and purring and take the Aron straight up to Israeli territory, and the Aron is brought back to Beit Shemesh. The people of Beit Shemesh are standing and harvesting half naked. They see the Aron, they're barebacked. Oh, they said, oh, you ark. What happened that you left, and what happened that you came back?" They weren't respectful, and a lot of people died. The Aron came back. Initially, they rejoiced to see it. But then they started saying, "Hey, God, what happened? You changed your mind? Suddenly you do love us, you don't love us." They were talking disrespectfully, and many people died. The Navi continues with the story. The Jews come to Shmuel and say, "We need a king." We enter the story of Shmuel, who is looking for the donkeys that his father lost. And Shaul, thank you. He's looking for the donkeys his father, the big tzaddik Kish, lost. And as they're looking, his lad says, "Why don't we go to Shmuel?" And Shmuel's in the middle of a big sacrifice with the people. God had told them, "Make this big sacrifice, because tomorrow I will send the man who you will appoint as king." Shaul walks in. He's from the chest up, he's taller than everyone else. No one reaches beyond his shoulder blades. He's a head above everyone else. And when Shaul comes, Shmuel invites him to sit at the dais, and Shaul doesn't know what this is all about. Then he takes him into the house, and the next morning he takes him onto the rooftop, and he anoints him, and he says, "You're going to be the next king of Israel. And don't worry, your father's already gotten the donkeys. Go home, he's worried about you." Shaul tells the lad, before they enter the town, Shaul tells the lad, you know, we better make it quick before dad stops worrying about the donkeys and starts worrying about us. This was a servant, this was a son, but Shaul equates the servant with himself, Shaul's modesty, and that's one of the reasons Shaul was chosen as king, for his tremendous modesty. He was a huge tzaddik, Shaul. Shaul comes back home, his uncle asks him, what's going on? He says, oh, we made it back. He asks him, wait a second, what do you mean made it back? And what'd you do along the route? He says, oh, we stopped by the prophet. He says, and what'd the prophet tell you? So he says, the prophet told us that you guys found the donkeys already. He doesn't tell him, you know, the prophet anointed me and told me I'm going to be the first king of Israel. That he doesn't tell him. That's Shaul's modesty. And according to one opinion, that's why he was chosen as our first king. Shaul goes home, and the Jewish people unite. Shmuel tells them he has the king for them. He rebukes them for asking for a king improperly, and he says, okay, now we're going to call up the king, and no one could see him. Where's Shaul? Shaul went hiding. They pull Shaul and they say, Shmuel wants you up there at the dais. They throw him up to the dais. Shaul says, I'm not going up till God says so. So he says, I want you to check again. They check again, and God says, yeah, I still want him. He's the man. So Shaul is appointed king, and some people start mocking him, and they say, what's he worth? And Shaul is quiet. He's modest. And God doesn't approve of this modesty. It's wrong when a sage is being mocked that he doesn't protect his own honor. He was supposed to respond. So God sends Nachash, the king of Ammon, to attack the people of Yavesh Gilad. Now, we know the people of Yavesh Gilad were almost annihilated when they didn't join the war against Pelegish Begiva. So that was territory that didn't have too many people left in Yavesh Gilad. Remember, they were the one place that didn't join in the war against Benjamin, and the people of Israel said, if the people of Yavesh Gilad don't join the war, that means they're siding with the sinners. And after the war, they went and attacked and destroyed the people of Yavesh Gilad. So the people of Yavesh Gilad said, we're willing to be subservient to you, Nachash, whatever you want. He says, fine, no problem. Take out your right eye. If every one of you takes out his right eye, we'll make a peace treaty. So this is just an overview. We'll learn this in depth. So they say, wait, give us 7 days and we'll let you know. The messengers come and Shaul hears this and he says, that's ridiculous. He takes his cattle, slices it in pieces and sends a piece to each tribe. And he says, whoever doesn't join me, that's what his cattle is going to look like tomorrow. And the people join Shaul and he leads them to war and they destroy Nachash Ammoni. And then the people, after they see what a great warrior Shaul is, they say, who dares mock Shaul? We're going to re-anoint him and whoever spoke badly against him will die. Shaul says, no one has to die today. They re-anoint Shaul, and Shaul becomes the king, and everyone approves of him. Shmuel takes an accounting, and he tells the Jewish people, now that I've given over the reins to Shaul, let's take an accounting of if I've been fair with you or not. Remember God who brought you here, and the people say, you've been fair. And he tells them, remember how God led you and took care of you, and today it's a day of harvest, and this season if it rains, all the crops will be destroyed. You guys have sinned because you've asked for a king improperly, even though ordinarily in Israel it never rains during the harvest season. Our crops are based on rain throughout the winter and dry throughout the summer. Shmuel says, against nature, I'm going to call out to God, and you're going to see it rain, and you're going to see thunder, and it's all because of God's really upset at what you've done. And that's what happens, and the nation is scared. All their crops might be destroyed now. They say, okay, please pray that we shouldn't die. Shmuel says, of course, just because I'm not your leader anymore, just because Shaul's the leader, God forbid I should stop praying for you. Of course, I'll continue praying. Shaul takes the throne. He leads the Jewish people to tremendous military campaigns. The first military campaign, they stand opposite the Philistines. Once the Philistines hear we have a king, they come to attack. We only have two weapons in Israel that by miracle we had. The Philistines had come in and taken away all the weapons. The Jews were fighting with their plowshares and their equipment that they used in harvesting. And God made two weapons appear, one for Shaul, one for Yonasan. Yonasan says, if God wants us to win, we will. He takes his lad, he calls out to the Philistines over the hilltop. The Philistines say, you come here, we'll show you a thing or two. He tells his lad, that was the sign I wanted. If they said that, that means they're scared. They didn't come and attack us. He climbs across the mountain, even though he's climbing up, and they're on top. They're a whole battalion. It's only him and his lad. He starts attacking, and he's winning, and he's destroying the Philistines one after the other. Single-handedly, the Jews are preparing for war, and they see the Philistines retreating. So Shaul says, what's going on? How come they're retreating? We haven't attacked yet. They realize that someone's attacked. They realize it's been Yonasan. He's started the victory already. And so they attack. And Shaul makes the people take a vow that no one's going to eat that day. Jonathan doesn't know about this. They're chasing after the Philistines. They come to a forest. Jonathan dips his staff into the honey in the forest. And he tells the people, hey, look, I've eaten. I'm much better. The people say, what do you mean you've eaten? Your father made us all promise we wouldn't eat. Jonathan says, that's terrible. How you have strength to fight? Look, I have koach because I've eaten. Now, Jonathan wasn't there when they took the vow. The people came at the end of the day, they're famished, they start eating without slaughtering properly. Shaul says that's ridiculous. He comes and yells at them and reviews with them the laws of slaughtering properly, and he himself slaughters animals for the people. They make an altar and they want to go down and attack the Philistines. The Kohen says to Shaul, let's ask God, and God doesn't answer him. Shaul says, okay, someone sinned. If God isn't answering us in the middle of a war, obviously someone's done wrong. Yeah, whoever it is going to die. Whoever ate when I said shouldn't eat, even if it's Jonathan, my son, he's going to die. No one says a word. They draw lots and Jonathan comes up. So Shaul says, okay, Jonathan, tell me what you've done, son. Jonathan, and he's the great warrior. He led the victory that day. Jonathan says, well, I was going through the forest and I saw the honey and I ate. And Shaul says, okay, you're going to die. The people say, no, he led the victory today. And they find a halachic loophole to bail Jonathan out, and Jonathan doesn't die that day. We already start seeing a trend where the nation is leading Shaul and not Shaul the nation. Shaul wanted to go to war. The Kohen said, let's ask God. Shaul said, whoever ate from it will die. The people say, no, we'll bail Jonathan out. And that's going to be a trend where Shaul, out of his modesty, is not going to be a leader the way he should be. We'll deal with questions when we do it in depth. Now we're just running through we're going to try to cover the book of Shmuel. We have about 10 minutes. I want to be done in 10 minutes. Shaul led many great military campaigns, and it's lost. People don't realize that. In the Navi, it's like hidden, because the focus of the Navi are two errors of Shaul. One error is Shmuel tells Shaul, don't start the war before I come. Shaul sees that the people are starting to leave. The people are tremendously outnumbered in one of the wars against the Philistines. And when the people see the Philistines are coming closer on attack, and Shaul isn't preparing to attack, they're all prepared and Shaul isn't attacking, some of the people start leaving. Shaul says, okay, Shmuel told me to wait, but I've waited the 7 days, he's not here, the war has to start, I'm going to bring the sacrifice without him. He brings the sacrifice, and just then Shmuel shows up. Shmuel says, what'd you do? I told you to wait. I told you not to attack without me, not to bring the sacrifice without me. Shaul says, yeah, but the nation was leaving. I couldn't go to war, and you weren't here, and the war was about to begin. So I took control of myself, and I brought the sacrifice. Shmuel says, no, you didn't listen to the prophet. A king must listen to the prophet. If you don't listen to the prophet, the kingdom will not continue by you. I warned you, you didn't listen. And so the dynasty of Shaul will not continue. God regrets it. They go to war. The second error is when Shaul goes to war against Amalek. Shmuel tells him, don't leave anyone around from Amalek. And the nation has some pity over the women, the children, the king, Agog. And they leave behind the king, Agog. And they leave behind the animals. And Shaul figures out all kinds of halachic loopholes not to listen to Shmuel. And when Shmuel comes and says, what's wrong with you? You've desecrated God's word. God told you to destroy them, finished. You didn't. Shaul says, yeah, well, I found a halachic loophole. Shmuel says, what are you talking about, halachic loopholes? I told you to destroy them. I told you to kill them. Because of that, you won't have a continuation. Again, Shaul trying to be extra good. Al ti tzadik alve. Don't be too kind, King Solomon told us. God told you what to do. You got to do what he says. Shaul tried to find the loophole to leave Agog around. And that's why we were almost annihilated. That's Amalek that remained, because of Shaul's error. Shmuel turns to leave. Shaul calls him. He says, don't leave. I at least give me the honor. You'll be with me in front of the nation. And he grabs Shmuel's coat. And as Shmuel turns, the coat tears. And Shmuel tells Shaul, that's the sign for you. Just as my coat has torn, so too the kingdom has been torn from you. The guy who will tear your coat is the one that will take your kingdom. They conclude the war, and God... And Shmuel laments Shaul. He anointed him as the first king. And Shmuel himself cries and weeps and begs God to see if there's a way out of it. And God says, no, I've already given the good to someone else. And once good is decreed upon someone in heaven, we don't take it back. So God tells Shmuel, go, I want you to anoint the next king. Shmuel comes to Yishai, Jesse. He comes to look at the kids. We'll get to the details when we review it. At the end of the story, he anoints David as the future king. And now there's a war against the Philistines. Shaul starts having depression, melancholy. He knows that he's ruined his future. He asks them to find someone to play beautiful music. David is chosen. David is the lad who's sitting by Saul playing a beautiful harp, playing beautifully. There's a war, and David is back home watching the sheep. And there's a great Philistine warrior named Goliath, Goliath. Goliath goes out and blasphemes and curses, and for 40 days he walks back and forth cursing the Jewish people and cursing God. David is sent by his father to get divorce contracts from his brothers in the event that they die or get lost in the wars. Their women, their wives shouldn't remain in limbo, not knowing what's going on. And when he comes, he hears the Philistine cursing, and he asks what's going on, and they say, no one dares go out against him. This is the same Philistine. Okay, we'll do that when we review it in depth. David says, what do you mean? Who cares? What? No one dares go out against him? God decides who will win. They say, the people tell him, you know, the king said, whoever goes out against him saves the honor of Israel. He's the person, the king will give him a daughter, the king will free him of taxes, all kinds of gifts. David says, I'm going out against him. His brother hears him. He says, you, gives him a bunch of names. What'd you come here to mess up? You just want to see action. He says, what do you want from me? He comes to Saul, he comes to the king and says, I'll go out against him. God is the one that decides who will win. I had two miracles in my life where I took on a bear and a lion, and I didn't know what came over me, and I won. And it was a sign that in the future I could take something on that I wouldn't know how. And that it must be a sign for this. Saul gives him his clothing. He says, you don't have armor, take mine. David wears Saul's armor and suddenly it fits. Saul is scared stiff. What happened? This kid, my armor fits him. David sees the look on Saul's face. He says, no, I've never used these. I don't know how to use them. Please, hold on to them. He goes and collects 5 stones to go against Goliath, and one day we'll discuss what happened with the remaining 4 stones. He goes out to war, and we all know the story. With his stone, he destroys Goliath in spite of Goliath's honor, and we will discuss all the details of that story when we learn in depth. When Saul sees him, he asks his people, who's that boy? What do you mean, who's that boy? He's been serving you. We'll discuss that. Great halachic discussion over here. The people start falling in love with David. Saul sees in David a nemesis, a threat. Saul tries killing David when he's playing the harp. David runs away. And the rest of the book of Shmuel focuses on Saul chasing after David and near misses. One time Saul's going to the bathroom in a cave where David and his men are hiding from him. And David cuts off the corner of his cloak. And then Saul comes out of the cave. And when he's over at the next hilltop, David comes out and holds the cloth and says, my father, look what I have here. And he looks back and he sees the cloth. And David says, you see, I could have hurt you. And I wouldn't. I would never touch a person anointed by God. You are our king. Why do you chase after me? People say I've rebelled against you. It's not true. I've always been faithful. Saul says to him, you are a better man than I am. You will be a good king. You are right. You are just. Saul sees the torn cloak. He remembers the sign that Shmuel told him. And come back, David, he tells him. David says, no, I'm not coming back. But he says, I won't hurt you. David says, okay. But you just know that I could have and I didn't. Saul goes back. His chief general tells him, must be your coat got caught on a thorn or something. He wasn't so close to you. We wouldn't have let that happen. Can't be. Could have killed you. It's all a farce. And Saul gives chase again. Saul's chasing David. He goes to sleep inside his camp. David sneaks in with his men, takes the spear of Saul and takes the flask of water near his head. Goes over to the next hilltop and calls out to Avner, the chief general. Hallo, Tane, Avner. What do you say now, Avner? Where'd I catch these? Avner, you fell asleep on the guard duty. How could you leave the king like that? Saul wakes up and David says, look what I got here, Avner. What are you going to say now? What answer do you have? How did I get these? Where are you guys? You're the king's soldiers. You all deserve the death penalty. How could you let the king go like that? Shaul hears it. He says, David, you're right. You're right. You could have killed me. You were right next to me. You are right. Come back. David says, I'm not coming back. I'm not going to deal with you. God will deal with you. One day you will die, but not by me. I will not come back. But from that day onward, Saul really stops the chase. David has to go at one point among the Philistines and at that point, he's scared. He's heard Saul's coming. He goes among Philistine territory. And the Philistines think he's fighting for them, that he switched sides. In truth, every time David would go and conquer another city and destroy and not leave anyone around to tell the tale and send all the loot to his family out in Judean territory. The time comes when the Philistines go head on with the Jews. And Saul has to come out to war against the Philistines, and David is supposed to go with the Philistines to war. And he doesn't know what to do. Now the Philistines are going against his own men. Up until now he's been helping his own men behind everyone's back. But he's been helping them, and now he's supposed to face off against his men. And when we learn it in depth, we'll see how David, what David did at that point. At any rate, Saul is prepared to go to war, and he doesn't know what to do, and he goes to the prophet, and he has no prophet. Now, at one point, Saul had heard that when David was on the run, he went to Nob, the city of Kohanim, and they gave him bread. The truth is that when David went to that city, he told them, "I'm on a mission from the king, and the matter is so urgent that the king sent me quickly. I didn't have time to take my sword. I didn't have time to take food. Give me whatever food you got." The Kohen asked him, "I don't have any food other than the holy bread." David says, "Give it to me. I got to take whatever you got. We're on an important mission in the king's men. What weapons do you have here?" The Kohen Gadol says, "I have no weapons. I only have the sword you took from Goliath that you put with holy vessels as a sign of the great miracle God did for us." David says, "Give it to me. It's the best sword there is." And then David runs. There's a man named Doeg. And Doeg, he is one of Saul's men. And at one point, when Saul's upset at his people, he says, "You guys are all in cahoots with David. No one's helping me here. No one's telling me what's going on behind my back. You all know that my son and David have this pact between them, Jonathan, Jonathan, and David. And none of you bother telling me. You're all waiting for David to become king and to reward you." And then Doeg, under pressure, says, "Well, I'll tell you something. If you really want to know, David went to the city of Kohanim, to the city of Nob, and they gave him bread, and he was on the run, and they're the ones that gave him the weapons and the bread." And David and Saul calls in the Kohen Gadol Achimelech, and he asks him, "Tell me, why'd you help David?" Achimelech says, "What do you mean? He's your son-in-law. He married your daughter. He told me he was on a mission going from you." Saul says, "No, you're a liar. You knew you were helping him. You were helping the rebellion." He tells his chief generals, "Take your men and kill all the Kohanim here in the city." His men say, "No." He says, "What do you mean, no? I'm your king." They say, "Right. You're the king, and the Torah says you're the king to tell us to do the Torah. So long as you tell us within the lines of the Torah, we listen to you. The second you tell us a commandment that's out of line with the Torah, you're not our king. We don't have to listen to you." And his chief general Avner refuses. And then he turns to Doeg and says, "Doeg, you're the one who testified against them. You claim that they did all of this. Now put your money where your mouth is." And Doeg picks up his sword and kills out all the Kohanim of Nov, the city of Kohanim. And so now, Doeg. Now, when Saul is standing before the war with the Philistines, he doesn't have a coin to go to. He killed out the Kohanim. The Kohanim that remained fled to David. So Saul is going to war and he doesn't know what to do. One of the things Saul did, one of the righteous things he did, was killed all the women who would bring back people from the dead. And now he's looking for someone, some prophet, someone to tell him what's going on, and he has no one. And finally he asks his men, and they tell him there is one woman left who can bring back people from the dead. He goes to the woman, she brings back Shmuel. We'll discuss more details at the time, and Shmuel tells him, "Tomorrow you and your kids are dead with me. And if you do that, the Jewish people will survive. If you run away from the war, you'll live, but it won't be good for the Jews and won't be good for you. If you go to war the way you should, you and your children will die, but you will merit the world to come." And even though Saul knows he's going to die at that war, he goes to war, and he and his children die. The people of Yavish Gilad, if you recall, they were the people, not many people, but they were the people that Saul saved when he began his reign. They run into Philistine territory to take out his body and the children's body to give them proper burial. They sneak in and grab the bodies. The Philistines were going to, like the Palestinians do today, hang up the bodies and play games with them and show everyone what they did. So they snuck in at night and took the bodies back and gave them proper burial. David is in Philistine territory, remember. David is, he's just had a terrible war. When David was out, the Amalekim came in and captured his family and all the families of his men, and David had to go to war against them, and he didn't know if he'd find any of them alive, but he did. God helped them. They managed to attack the Amalekim and get their families back, and no one was hurt, and they got the loot of the Amalekim. And as David is fighting the Amalekim, the Jews are fighting the Philistines, and a man comes to David and tells him that he was with Saul, and Saul saw that he was losing the war, and Saul asked him to kill him so that he doesn't get killed and tortured by the Philistines. And the guy says, "I killed him, and here's his crown, here's his bracelet, here's his royal things." David says, you killed the king of God? You killed the man anointed by God? Have him dead. You thought you'd get a prize for me because you told me you killed Saul. They killed the man. And David commands his men to weep over the loss of the great king Saul. And here David is anointed as king. David becomes king, and the Jewish people don't accept him. They appoint another leader, an offspring of Saul's, Ishbosheth. He is the king of the Jewish people. The chief general Avner joins him, and there's a civil war between David's men and Avner's men. They meet on a bank, and Avner tells David's chief general, Yoav, let the lads play. They send representatives. They each kill one another. And they continue the war until finally there's a rift between Ishbosheth and Avner, and Avner comes and says, I'll bring the Jewish people to you, David. And he goes to do that. David tells him, I'll appoint you chief general. David's own chief general, his brother, Yoav's brother, was killed by Avner during one war. And so Yoav avenges that death. After Avner brings the Jews over to David's side, Yoav kills him. He finds an excuse, he finds a way, he brings him to court, and he has him executed. David tells Yoav and the men, how'd you do that? Behind my back, you killed him. You know what you did? They threatened continued civil war. All of you have to tear your clothing, all of you have to weep. Well, a great man of Israel was lost. What a tzaddik, Avner. And they all lament, and David tells the Jewish people, you should all know I had nothing to do with the murder of Avner. I wouldn't double cross him. He came to my side, and I'll kill him after we made a deal. And he weeps, and he has all the people weep, and they try to give him to eat after the burial, and David says, I'm not eating today. I'm not eating till nightfall. Such a great man died. And when the people see, they see he's sincere, and they realize that he had nothing to do with Avner's death. The Ishbosheth hears that Avner's dead, and Ishbosheth feels like he doesn't have a chance. Two people come in and murder him while he's sleeping, and they come to tell David that they did it. And again, David tells them, I can't believe you. The man who told me that Shaul was dead, he thought he was giving me good news, I killed him. And now you wicked people went and killed the tzaddik when he was lying and sleeping. Believe me, I will avenge his blood. And David has them executed, the two people who assassinated Ishbosheth. And then the Jews come and anoint David as king over all of the Jewish people. The rest of the stories, Be'ezrat Hashem, will learn. This is an overview, generally. I mean, the general picture is David is king of the Jewish people. He leads them to great wars, to great victories. We have the story of David's dancing with all his might as he leads the Aron up. And then his wife, the daughter of Saul, mocks him. And David tells her, I don't care if you mock me. I'm dancing in front of God with all my heart. That's why God chose me and not your father, because I'm more interested in his honor than my honor. And Michal, because she mocked David, she did not have a child till the day she died. She died at childbirth when she did have a child. David tells Nathan, I want to build a temple. And Nathan tells David, go for it. God tells Nathan, tell him not. Your son will. You spilt a lot of blood. David raises a lot of funds for the building of the Beit HaMikdash. God promises David that the throne will remain with him. David asks God for a test. God tests him and he fails the test. We'll go into the details of the test when we learn in depth. And when David fails the test, he is promised that there will be sword within his home, there will be bloodshed within his home. And the rest of the book of Samuel focuses really on the fulfillment of that promise, that David pays the price for his sin. David has one son rape one daughter, and then another son avenges his sister and kills that son. Amnon rapes Tamar, and then Tamar's brother Avshalom murders Amnon. Later on, Avshalom, that son, leads a rebellion against David. Most of the people side with Avshalom. David reaches a point where he has to run from his son, and then there's a great civil war. David's men, Avshalom's men, finally they kill Avshalom. Then later on there's another rebellion in David's home. Another son tries to take the throne. There's Sheva ben Bichri who leads a rebellion against David. And all of these stories, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will learn as we learn the book of Shmuel. We'll learn it in depth. This was a very, very quick overview. And for lack of time, we're going to have to start the real book of Shmuel. So let's begin. Yes, sir.
Rabbi, I have a question about the...